So we're going to go ahead and look at the review here for Daniel 11. So first part here, this chapter foretells in most minute detail the successive histories of Xerxes of Persia, Alexander the Great, king of Macedon and conqueror of Persia, the fourfold division of Alexander's kingdom at his death, and the consequent conflicts between the kings of the north and the kings of the south, the Seleucida and the Ptolemies, and lastly, the proud violence of Antiochus Epiphanes against the covenant people of God and his final doom. The details are given with such minuteness beforehand in order to strengthen and support the faithful ones among God's ancient people in the fiery ordeal through which they were about to pass, during the long period when they were to be without any living prophets. If the world powers were about to be permitted to trample underfoot the people of the covenant, the latter would take comfort in knowing that their God had told them of it in the scripture of truth. Or as in Daniel 10:21, long before, and had also engaged that, though the trial under Antiochus, the Old Testament Antichrist, was to be most severe, yet it was to be of short duration, and he was to come to his end, and none should help him. And we saw that in Daniel 11:45. When the time came, he wasn't going to receive any help, despite all his machinations and plans, and putting his trust in fortified cities and power and trying to build himself up. So now Daniel chapter 12, verses 1 through 4 here. And at least in the NIV, it titles Daniel 12 as the end times. And all we have here is 13 verses left of our book of Daniel. And then we'll move on to our next subject of study. But this time, we're going to go on, and I mentioned this, I think, last week, how chapter 12 starts with Michael, who we've seen before, and again, this idea that we get in Daniel, there's more to the world and the conflicts in the world than just what we physically see and perceive. Because here we have this idea in verse 1 of the one who protects, the prince that protects your people. And Michael, we know as one of the archangels, I believe, and one of the high-ranking angels there. And part of his job, I'm not sure if that's the best way, but that's a easy way to look at. Part of his job, or one of his jobs, one of his responsibilities, is the people of Israel at the time here of Daniel's prophecy. He was their guy. At that time, Michael, the great prince who protects your people, will rise. There will be a time of distress such as has not happened from the beginning of nations until then. But at that time, your people, everyone whose name is found written in the book, will be delivered. Multitudes who sleep in the dust of the earth will awake, some to everlasting life, others to shame and everlasting contempt. Those who are wise will shine like the brightness of the heavens, and those who lead many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. But you, Daniel, close up and seal the words of the scroll until the time of the end. Many will go here and there to increase knowledge. All right, so 11:45 there, he will pitch his royal tent between the seas at the beautiful holy mountain, yet he will come to his end and no one will help him. So at the time where this guy meets his end, we come to verse 1 of chapter 12. The end of that horrible time, we have this. Michael the prince equal archon, archangel, arises. And this corresponds to kind of the birth of Jesus. This is when he's coming up. Because we're coming to the end of this and heading into the beginning of Matthew, Mark, Luke, John. I mean, they don't all pick up in the same place, but where the Gospels pick up, we're coming up to that point in actual history where Daniel is here in chapter 12. Great distress in the days before Jesus' first coming and again in finality. Daniel's people, those written in the book, resurrection of the just and the unjust judgment, who are the wise, what is their destiny, and until the end, the quest for knowledge continues. Now this passage, it corresponds with, okay, the end of that time, but also what do these first four verses sound a lot like they're referencing? Or what other book could we put these first four verses into that we're somewhat familiar with? Huh? Yeah, these sound a lot like the book of Revelation. There's a lot of parallels that you can see between this last chapter here opening and the book of Revelation. Because what does the book of Revelation also have in it that we see echoed here for salvation? Well, there's the great prince, but there in that first verse, everyone whose name is found where? Written in the book. And in the book of Revelation, what is the main key to get into heaven? What has to be the case for you there? Your name has to be written in the book. If your name's not written in the book, you don't get in. You know, heaven is a reservation only. If your name is not down on the reserved list, you're not getting in. That's kind of the deal. I mean, you go to a restaurant, whatever. Oh, do you have a reservation? I don't know any restaurants really that do that anymore. It seems like everywhere that I've gone the last couple of years, we don't take reservations. But that idea is you have to have called ahead in some way. And we understand that to be, you know, the same thing that Peter told those there in Acts chapter 2. What must we do to be saved? Repent and be baptized, every one of you, for the forgiveness of sins, that you can receive the gift of the Holy Spirit. And on from that point, we have much of the New Testament talking about what you need to do after that point to continue into that pathway, how you, once you get there, and what you have to do onwards. But this section here, these four verses, they sound a lot like things that we pick up in Revelation, the ideas that we have given to us there. There's two different groups. It says the wise and their destiny, but it talks about those who are wise will shine like the brightness of the heavens, and those who lead many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever. It's kind of this idea a little bit that, you know, there's those who are saved, and then there's those who also put in the effort to make sure that they brought along as many as they could who were out there working. And sometimes we may fall into one category and sometimes the other. Hopefully we fall primarily into that latter category in our lives. We end up working hard on others and bringing others. But at the very least, we do want to be counted among the wise. And what's that last deal there? Until the end, the quest for what continues? Right. What's Daniel going to do here at the end of verse 4? Yep, he's going to seal it up.
Which is also an idea that comes up in Revelation, because John is not actually told the same thing. There's one instance where John is told, you know, don't write this down, but it's actually a little different there where he's told not to seal it.
And the things that are sealed in the book of Revelations.
It's one thing, whatever the seven thunders said.
Yeah. But the seal, well, but there are in Revelation things that are sealed that become unsealed. Yes.
Yeah.
kind of the end. Daniel here is talking about this, and all that is undone. But this idea also, the quest for knowledge continues. Many will go here and there to increase knowledge. It doesn't say that that's a good thing. It doesn't say it's a bad thing, but it doesn't say that that's a good thing. Many will go here and there to increase knowledge. And that is something we find a great deal of. People are going here and there, but where are they not going to increase their knowledge? Yeah, they're not going to God. They're going here and there. They're going all over the place. And I see that a lot. I have a few people who I keep track of via Facebook that I went to high school with. They're on my friends list, so they post from time to time. And yeah, they are running all over the place for knowledge. Not in good places. Not in the right places. But they are definitely seeking knowledge of a sort. Here and there. Alright, so verses 5 through 12. Ben, would you mind reading that? Or 5 through 10, I'm sorry, not 12. 5 through 10.
Then I, Daniel, looked, and behold, two others stood, one on this bank of the stream, and one on that bank of the stream. And someone said to the man clothed in linen, who was above the waters of the stream, how long shall it be to the end of these wonders? And I heard the man clothed in linen, who was above the waters of the stream. He raised his right hand and his left toward heaven, and swore by him who lives forever, that it would be for a time, times, and half a time, and that when the shattering of the power of the holy people come to an end, all these things would be finished. I heard, but I did not understand. Then I said, O my Lord, what shall be the outcome of these things? He said, go your way, Daniel, for the words are shut up and sealed until the time of the end. Many shall purify themselves and make themselves white and be refined, but the wicked shall act wickedly, and none of the wicked shall understand. But those who are wise shall understand. And from the time of ten.
Just 10. Yep. Yeah. Alright. So, again, very much paralleling the book of Revelation in several respects here. But we have these figures. And this is just let us know the vision began by the river in chapter 10. So we're continuing on from that point and coming to the close of the vision process and of Daniel here. So this
time times and half time.
Yeah. Which correlates, as far as I can tell, to this part of the slide here. It would be nice if Dad was here to close this up and do this, but he's not. But correlates here to the, I believe, the 1,260 days. Time, times, and half a times. 3.5 years. Which goes back to the Daniel 9 and 27. At the end of the 70 weeks, Messiah ended sacrifice and offering and was cut off in the midst of the 70th week. You remember we talked about that, where Christ came for the 3.5 years. And it was in the middle of that half year that he was sacrificed on the cross. And when he did that, that was it. Didn't have to do any more sacrifices. That's why I have dust on my pants today from doing sanding in my garage on wood instead of blood on my pants from going out and having to sacrifice my sin offering, guilt offering today. We don't have to go out and do that. It would be a messy world if we still had to do the sacrifices in order to cleanse ourselves before God. So he ended that. Now we have the remainder of the final week, half of 7, making the whole complete. So everything is going to be completed, but it's not yet completed. Just as Revelation says, you know, they're waiting. We're waiting for that final end point. That's kind of where Daniel's going to be left at, waiting for that final end point. Things are going to happen. Things are going to change. But before that final ending comes, what's going to happen to those who are holy? What does he say here And I've kind of iterated this before, and I still have a hard time with it. But many will be purified and spotless and refined, but the wicked will what?
Act wickedly.
Yeah. The wicked are continued. There are going to be people who go out and they clean themselves up spiritually, morally, ethically. They are going to clean themselves up. But the wicked, they're going to continue to act wickedly. It was no surprise yesterday when I happened to see the news that they released the cause of death for Tom Petty. It was a drug overdose. Oh, what a shocker. A guy who sang multiple songs in various ways about taking drugs, and it's great to take drugs, and how much he in some ways he romanticized and glorified taking drugs in a lot of the songs. So yeah, and you know, they said it was pain pills and a whole bunch of stuff that he was on, but he overdosed his body with taking drugs. A broken hip and other things. Just I have a feeling there were other things that he was taking that were not listed in the official cause of death. Again, based on his life. But this idea, the wicked, they're going to continue to act wicked. They do stuff because, why?
This is what they do.
Yeah, they want to do it. It is difficult to follow God and be a Christian, because what do you have to fight against? What you want to do. Now, not all the time. We're not constantly fighting against ourselves, because, you know, as Paul said, it's a war between what the spiritual side of him wants to do and what the fleshly side of him wants to do. Part of us does want to do that. When we go with that side, that's great. But part of us wants to do this other thing. We got to fight that part.
How many people who do drugs, people who do those things, how many of those people mourn the loss of their compatriots who have gone too far? They don't take the lesson that was learned. Good people, bad people, they just make bad decisions and they keep on. And people will do that until something forces them not to.
Yeah, unfortunately, the forcing not to, that's where you lose choice. That's where a lot of people get confused. Why do we have this? Because God allows the absolute freedom, the freedom to choose what to do. And that's it. That's true freedom right there. The freedom to choose what to do is true freedom. What do I do? What choice do I make in any given circumstance? You know, even if somebody has you bound up and tied, you still have choices to make. How do you respond to anything that happens as you go forward? You still have that choice. And that's what freedom is. If God takes away choice, then we don't have freedom. We just have automatons. That's whatever he says, we do, and no choice. That's a big deal. And that's why we do have the mess that we have, because people continue to abuse that freedom, that personal choice. As a result, these people like to be justified. We all like to be justified in what we're doing, right? I mean, when I do something at home, I'm about 5 years old. Because the first thing I want to do is go take it to Jody and say, look at it and see what I did. Give me praise. Give me justification that I was good and you are happy with this and I didn't waste my time or whatever.
Like the cat who drags in the
rat. Right. We all want justification. And the wicked want justification. That's why we have this point. What happens to the holy people?
Some people have said to me, the devil won't know how to handle me. I'd rather do what I want to do and go to hell than give up yourself. Realize that you aren't the main one. And people do this consciously.
Yeah.
Because they want to the reaction of other people.
And that's buying into the big myth that you get from a lot of the comics and movies and TV and radio and other things, that the devil is somehow in charge of hell. That he is the... He's not. He's not responsible. That's the whole point of the Bible. The devil is not responsible. God has taken away responsibility. Why would he give him the jail as his responsibility if he's already shown he's not responsible? Why would he give him authority and power?
Why would he give him a king?
Yeah. It's not like Greek mythology where you have that king of the underworld. There's no king of the underworld. Everybody's in the same situation. As far as the best thing I can say to look at is everybody is in solitary confinement, and all you can hear is the screams of rage and frustration from your fellow prisoners. That's it. You can't get out. There's no big escape plan. You can't pick the locks. There's nothing you can do. You are stuck, and you can't do anything about it, but you get to hear everybody else's misery, and you can't make them stop. And all you're going to do is be yelling and screaming the same as them to make them stop, and about your own frustration and how mad you are. And nobody's going to be wishing that they had listened to God, because they're all going to be hating God. That's the whole point. That's where all the people that don't like God go. And they don't suddenly change their mind because things are horrible and they're separated from Him, cut off from everything that He's done. All right. 11 through 13. Oh, there is one. Let's see.
One last thing while you're trying to get that figured out. When he says that your son will purify themselves and the wicked will continue that wickedly.
Yes.
It can really easily sound as though people don't have the choice there. But that's never what it's implied to be. That's why you have people like Paul, who was, of the sinners, he was the worst. So that God's grace be made manifest. The wickedness can come to him. That's why you have the book of Ezekiel, where he says if the wicked man turns away from his wickedness, becomes righteousness, the wicked things he did will be remembered no more. But then if the righteous turn, then the righteous things they did will be. But, you know, men are not set for certain on the course. It is a course that they themselves have chosen. Which is why you have the righteous, the wise, will purify themselves. Not that they weren't wicked before, but that they went through the effort to try to make themselves pure.
Yes, well, it says made spotless and refined. It's not that you weren't, that you were before. You have to be made that way. Yeah. I was just verifying that we were as close as I thought. We might just go ahead and do these two slides, and then Dad will be surprised that, oh, you're not going to get done with this stuff.
You want me to help you?
Well, maybe he's going to add more, but I mean, there's only two.
You can go back a slide and I can say them out.
There's only two verses left, and I have just over 10 minutes. I think I can handle, well, that's three verses, 11, 12, 13. But I think I can handle that.
We'll see.
It's only 3 minutes a verse. I can do that. I can do three stops in that time, so I can surely do three verses. So, 11, 12, and 13. Chuck, could you read that?
From the time that the daily sacrifice is abolished and the abandonment that causes desolation is set up, there will be 1,290 days. Blessed is the one who waits for it reaches the end of the 1,335 days. As for you, go your way till the end. You will rest, and then at the end of days you will rise to receive your allotted inheritance.
Okay. So, I kind of got the impression that we're mixing a little bit in with the two things that we're talking about. The end of sacrifice is Christ. But also, if you remember, we went back there in chapter 11, this really abhorrent ruler is going to rise, and he is going to abolish the sacrifice in the temple from the time in between the Old and New Testament. So they can't go there and sacrifice anymore. And that's where we have the 1290 from right there. That all this time, he's going to do that. And instead, if you remember, he put up abominations in the temple. And the guy that did that, he put up a statue of Zeus and also of his eagle there in the actual Jewish temple. He erected these Greek altars in there, Greek idols in the temple there, and caused this abomination to happen. So he says, okay, those that last, that's great, but what is it? How long is it that you have to actually last to be blessed?
1,335 days.
Yeah, you got to carry on an extra 45 days longer than the. So there's this extra time tacked on here. You got to survive that, and then there's a little bit more. But really, if you can survive the 1290, what's 45 more days? And I kind of feel that way in my life. I have already survived 18 and a half years in my career. So I only have like 11 and a half to go. If I've done 18 and a half, 11 and a half is not that much. And I was talking to a guy the other day. He's got less than 4.5 years to go. Wow, that sounds like a cakewalk. And this week we had somebody come back to work who's been out for 2 years with injury, and they only have to go a year and a half. Not even a year and a half. Man, I think I could do that laying on my back. That's nothing at this point. So when you can just cut it down to this, look at what I've already done and look at how much I have left, I think that makes it a little bit easier. And that's one of the reasons you have this. You can see an end in sight, and you have this goal, this accomplishment, and you can say, look, I've survived this. I've made it through that. I just have to push on through this. So right here, our notes. From the time that the daily sacrifice will be taken away and the abomination that maketh desolate set up, there should be 1,290 days. That's back there in Daniel 11:31. The willful king, or the king of the north, shall take away the daily sacrifice, and they shall place the abomination that maketh desolation. As to this epoch, or epoch, which is probably prophetically germinant and manifold, the profanation of the temple. I'm not sure if that's even a real word that he threw in there. I think he might have made that one up. Huh? That's a real word, huh? The profanation of the temple. I'm going to have to find ways to use that.
To make something profane. Not that hard.
Yes, but it's...
The profanation of our language.
Yes. Your profanation of the language is disgusting to me. Stop swearing. The profanation of the temple by Antiochus, continuing from the month Ajar, of the year 145 BC until the restoration of worship by Judas Maccabeus in the 25th day of the 9th month, Chisla, of 143 BC. According to the Seleucid era, occupies 1,290 days. 45 days more elapsed before Antiochus' death and the month of Shebus of 148 BC, so ending the Jews' calamities. So 45 days after the Maccabees, the guy dies. And who cares? As we saw at the end of chapter 11, nobody cares. Nobody cares. Good riddance to bad rubbish, as they say.
Not that they didn't care, just they weren't upset.
Yes, nobody cared in the oh, too bad way. Yes. Everybody's weeping, and it was tears of joy.
People cared in the
ooh. Yeah. Yes. Jesus also applied this prophecy to the destruction of Jerusalem by Rome in 70 AD. And such a time of distress lies ahead for the people of God at the end of time, which is what we have John the Apostle writing there in the book of Revelation. Things are going to be rough. One thing to keep in mind when it says things are going to be rough, things are not necessarily rough everywhere at all times for all people. Example, in America, for more than a century, we've had a pretty good time of it as Christians. Things have gotten rough in some ways. Intellectually, we've been attacked. some of the Sunday morning class we're going over there back there with the idea of the Genesis creation versus evolution. There's been a lot of attacks on Christianity in our Western world by mind and thought, and that's been difficult. But you go to other parts of the world, even in the Philippines or China or the Middle East or India, and the distress for Christians has been you can lose your head, or some other part of your body is used to end your life. You know, gunshot, decapitation, burning, a variety of things have happened. Up until today, I mean, that still happens today, where depending on where you are as a Christian, things can not go well. If you paid attention in the last several months in Egypt, the Coptic, I believe they're Coptic Christians there, which is about the only group that's in Egypt, and they're a very small minority, but they've come under some pretty dire oppression with violence and murder and other actions happening against them there in that land. And the government is kind of against it. At the same time, they don't do much about it. So this given to us here is a true state in our own times. And even if you go up to Canada, hey, nice people, right? But there are things that you cannot say in a church because you will be prosecuted under law that are in the Bible. It is considered hate speech to have certain parts of the Bible expressed in public in Canada. So there are attacks against those who would want to follow on. So this last idea here. Perseverance is key to victory for God's people. The people whose names are written in the book. That last verse there in Daniel. As for you, go your way till the end. You will rest, and then at the end of the days, you will rise to receive your allotted inheritance. Now, for Daniel, that's got to be something, right? I mean, that's the closing of the book, and what is that telling Daniel is the case for him? Right. It's that idea that we have in the New Testament. Well done, my good and faithful servant. This is a I don't know if bittersweet's the right term here, but you know what more could God give Daniel as a message here at the end? This is him patting him on the back, you know, like, good job. You got a couple more steps to go, and then you made it. You're in. If we could, it'd be nice if all of us could have. I mean, to a certain extent, I really don't want Daniel's experiences overall. They were pretty horrific, terrifying, scary, brutal.
You don't want to be thrown in the lion's den?
No, I don't even want to meet the angels, really, because I have not yet. Nowhere in the Bible it says, hey, they were really happy when they saw the angel and jumped for joy and were, it was, they fell down and fainted and were terrified. Afterwards, there may have been some jubilation. But really, it's an angel. Okay, now somebody helps you up and then you go on. But I don't really care for that experience. But it would be nice to have this little bit of closing to your life. Just that extra assurance. You know what? You did good. You made it. Here's your gold star. And look, see right there? That's your name. That's where I wrote your name down, right there. Okay? So when you come, don't worry. It's right there. See? I just point out, that's where I wrote your name down. You're in the book. You're good to go. But this idea of perseverance, that's what we have for Daniel. the first half of the book of Daniel, that's what that is. It's Daniel persevering. And in the second half with prophecies, it talks about all the bad stuff. I mean, there's a lot of bad stuff that happens in those prophecies. There's a lot of death, a lot of fighting, a lot of persecution for the people of Israel because of things that they've done, that they've brought it on themselves, not following through on their part of the promise with God. But at the end of all that, each one, he says, look, things come out to be better. It all comes to an end. And that's kind of what got Daniel started a little bit. Hey, I've been studying this. The prophecy says we get to go back to the land after 70 years. It's been like 70 years. Yeah, God always gives that. Hard times, but if you endure the hard times, we have that promise.
Nowhere in any of those prophecies does it say, this is what's going to happen. Now I want you to plan this to counter that.
Right. This is what's going to happen.
Just continue with God in spite of all situations around us.
Yeah, one of the messages of Daniel and part of the Revelation is you have to live through it. You can't stop it. You can't change it. It doesn't matter how hard you want to fight against it. But you do have to live through it. And there is a certain way to live through it. And as he says here, the wicked are going to be wicked in Revelation. You know, the rocks, the mountains are falling down. And what do the people say? They go out and they curse God. They don't change. They don't live through it in the proper way. They don't see it for the message that it really is. All right, well, click blank page.
So, as John says, or as John is told, this calls for patient endurance on the part of the saints.
Right. And that's part of what we all have to do is persevere. I just finished a study with Job a week or two ago, and yes, that's what it's all about, persevering. Job had to persevere through the ordeal that he was put through with all his suffering. And throughout the rest of the Bible, when he's brought up, it says an example of perseverance and somebody that you should not acclimate.
Emulate.
Yes. All right, we're going to go ahead and close there.